Science and Emotions. Baron d'Holbach said that knowledge becomes comprehension when it swings with emotion. It has often been asserted that emotions were difficult to grasp by modern research. This may be true, but mainly because of the nature of modern science and its almost neurotic split between mind and nature, whereas in the partnership worldview, mind is embedded in nature in the sense that our mind is part of a larger, more universal mind that inhabits all beings, animated or inanimate. By the same token, almost all non-Western cultures recognize the energetic nature of life and living. These are some of the major reasons why Western science remains until today almost ignorant about the true nature of our emotions and especially how they impact upon our sexual attractions. Fridtjof Capra, in his bestseller The Turning Point, notes, I quote, "In human biology, masculine and feminine characteristics are not neatly separated, but occur in varying proportions in both sexes. Similarly, the Chinese ancients believed that all people, whether men or women, go through yin and yang phases. The personality of each man and each woman is not a static entity, but a dynamic phenomenon resulting from the interplay between feminine and masculine elements." This view of human nature is in sharp contrast to that of our patriarchal culture, which has established a rigid order in which all men are supposed to be masculine and all women feminine, and has distorted the meaning of those terms by giving men the leading roles and most of society's privileges. End of quote. The same split between mind, or yang, and matter, or yin, so typical for Occidental ignorance, is reproduced in our culture by meta-medicine, that is young and authoritarian, a typical male profession, while in antiquity it was a female profession. It's a bullet science that tries to jerk out unwanted intruders in the form of bacteria and viruses with the doctor as war marshal, the laser gun in his hand to cut off cancer tumors. It's a frontline science running with the stupid dullness of soldiers rather than marching with the enlightenment of wistful healers. Capra notes that our society has consistently favored the yang over the yin, rational knowledge over intuitive wisdom, science over religion, competition over cooperation, exploitation of natural resources over conservation, and so on. In fact, generations back in time, we were much more knowledgeable about the roots of life and the fundamental meta-rational connectedness and cyclic nature of all living. Capra writes, I quote, "According to Chinese wisdom, none of the values pursued by our culture is intrinsically bad, but by isolating them from their polar opposites, by focusing on the yang, and investing it with moral virtue and political power, we have brought about the current sad state of affairs." End of quote. One of the few, if not the only, Western researcher who has ever understood the role of emotions was Wilhelm Reich. In a case report entitled "The Schizophrenic Split," Reich states, "Emotions are bioenergetic, plasmatic, and not mental or chemical or mechanical functions." End of quote. Chinese medicine always saw emotions as phenomena that are directly related to the flow of the bioenergy. Traditional Chinese medicine emphasizes the relationship between diseases and emotions. Seven emotional factors are recognized: joy, anger, melancholy, worry, grief, fear, and fright. They are the main pathogenic factors of endogenous diseases. These seven pathogenic emotions are physiological reflections of the human state of mind or are induced by environmental factors. Under normal conditions, these physiological phenomena will not cause disease. However, If the emotions are too stressful and constant, or the patient is too sensitive to stimulation, then they may induce acute and long-standing changes that result in diseases. Pathogenic emotional factors are considered capable of disturbing the functional activities of the qi or bioenergetic flow. For example, according to an ancient saying, anger makes the qi rush forward, overjoy makes the qi circulate slowly, grief consumes qi, fear causes qi to flow downward, and fright makes qi flow disorderly, while overthinking leads to qi stagnation. Traditional Chinese medicine considers that the normal or abnormal function of an unrestrained and free-flowing qi is directly related to emotional activities, and that the mental state is not only dominated by the heart but also the liver. When qi activities are normal, the body has a harmonious circulation of qi and blood, an easy mind, and happy emotions. If there is a dysfunction of qi's free flow, it will directly affect the individual's emotional state. Fridtjof Capra affirms that Wilhelm Reich's ergonomy quite closely reflects the energetic truth that was always recognized in Eastern science and worldview. I quote, "It is evident that Reich's concept of bioenergy comes very close to the Chinese concept of qi. Like the Chinese, Reich emphasized the cyclical nature of the organism's flow processes, and like the Chinese, he also saw the energy flow in the body as a reflection of a process that goes on in the universe at large. To him, bioenergy was a special manifestation of a form of cosmic energy that he called orgone energy. Reich saw this orgone energy as some kind of primordial substance present everywhere in the atmosphere and extending through all space, like the ether of 19th century physics. Inanimate as well as living matter, according to Reich, derives from orgone energy through a complicated process of differentiation." End of quote. The mentioned case study on schizophrenia that Reich conducted is highly revealing. Actually, it shows not only that schizophrenia is a purely emotional or biophysical disturbance, while the mental state of the patient is impeccable and in most cases even superior to a control person. Schizophrenia thus is not at all a mental illness. But beyond that insight, Reich's case report gives us insights in the nature of emotions. Reich notes repeatedly that schizophrenia comes about through the repression of our perception of emotions. Early in childhood, we all have been told that the hot melting feelings that we experience when we feel attracted to a person are bad and guilt-inducing and have to be blinded out. Sweet and melting organ sensations are the natural state of a freely flowing, organotically rich organism. Vital energies are in a continuous flow, and they are enhanced when we love and feel attracted to another organotic organism. The two organisms then, namely, begin to vibrate in unison, which reinforces the organotic streaming in each of the organisms. This streaming is something that the normal, unarmored character can perceive, usually as heat or a nice hot streaming flow circulating from the top of our head until our toes and back. However, as in our culture, from babyhood, our body sensations are veiled, repressed, and called sinful and bad, the organism's vitality begins to shrink, and finally, usually within or after puberty, begins to exhibit characteristics of an armored and sadistic character. The sadistic character, which is the predominant character structure within the Western industrial culture, is a bioenergetic setup where most of the organotic centers of the body are blocked or locked. Among these locked body parts are primarily the pelvis region, the upper neck, and the region between the eyebrows. In these regions, muscles are particularly crisp and inhibit the free flow of the vital energies. What happens is that emotions that normally are perceived as warm and agreeable are perceived as threatening and anxiety-creating. The more the character is blocked, the more the natural organ sensations are perceived as alien to the organism and thus as outside forces. This is particularly pronounced in the extreme case of organotic blockage that we know as schizophrenia, as Reich has vividly demonstrated in his case report and his writings on the characterological armor. But schizophrenia is only an extreme case of what potentially is already present in the civilized, repressed human. We can clearly distinguish two levels of paranoia: a socially accepted paranoia and schizophrenia. The difference is not one in quality, but only one of degree. The first vintage is religion, or what is commonly called religion, especially Christian religion. The devil in Christian religion is exactly all those desires and longings that are disintegrated and kept at stake by a strong, rigid character armor, and that thus are perceived as alien by the person, alien both in the sense of outside of the body and in the sense of guilt-creating. One step ahead, we are right in the circus of schizophrenia. It's really only a small step, after all, because the whole crazy belief system is already fully developed in socially accepted paranoia in the form of organized religion. As Reich remarks, I quote, "In contradistinction to the schizophrenic structure, the structure of homo normalis keeps one or the other of the contradictory structures continually in a state of repression. Thus, in homo normalis, the split of the personality is hidden." End of quote. From these important insights, Reich reached alarming conclusions about the structure of our society as a whole. I quote, "Thus, we must conclude that the mental functions of self-perception and consciousness are directly related to and correspond to certain bioenergetic states of the organism, in kind as well as in degree." End of quote. This means, as Michel Audin stated, that emotions are modes of perception. The view that emotions are genuine antennas of lucid and aware consciousness is highly uncommon in our Western science tradition. It's a heretic view. However, it is the prevailing view in most non-Western cultures and especially in shamanic tribal cultures. Reich also is confirmed in most of his findings, especially regarding the nature of emotions, by channeled messages such as Jane Roberts' Seed Visions and others. What then are the consequences of these fundamental insights into the nature and the role of emotions for childhood and the conditions children are subjected to within emotionally repressive cultures? Wilhelm Reich has extensively researched about this particular topic, and his last book, Children of the Future, was devoted to this immensely important research. That Reich wrote this important book so late in life was because he was very careful, at first, to applying his far-reaching findings to children and early child-rearing. Eventually, because of his long-term friendship and constant exchanges with Alexander Sutherland Neal, the founder of Summerhill School, Reich then decidedly began to research into the muscular armoring and the early emotional shrinking reactions of the bioplasma observed in neurotic babies. Long before Frédéric Le Boyer and Michel Audin and the fashionable approach of nonviolent childbirth, Wilhelm Reich showed the disastrous effects of early emotional and tactile deprivation during conventional birthing and infantile circumcision, as it is common practice in the United States. From his work with neurotic and psychotic patients over decades, Reich reached the clear conclusion that most of our misperceptions of reality go back to early childhood and have their roots in early life-denying prohibitions and harsh punishments of small children. Historically, as many studies have shown, small children were considered as insensitive or, as for example in the Calvinistic belief system, generally sinful creatures. Reich corrects this wrong perception, stating, I quote, "If no severe damage has already been inflicted on it in the womb, the newborn infant brings with it all the richness of natural plasticity and development. This infant is not, as so many erroneously believe, an empty sack or a chemical machine into which everybody and anybody can pour his or her special ideas of what a human being ought to be. It brings with it an enormously productive and adaptive energy system which, out of its own resources, will make contact with its environment and begin to shape that environment according to its needs." End of quote. When Reich examined very healthy babies that were raised in a way that is bioenergetically correct, without having suffered birth or other trauma, thus babies who enjoyed a loving and supportive family environment and that received lots of tactile affection, he found that these babies did not at all resemble to the kind that, for example, were known to Sigmund Freud when he established his theories. In one word, these children, like little David, had no sadistic drives at all. I quote, "His body was soft. It yielded easily to any kind of passive movement. There was no rigidity, apart from some restriction in the pelvis, which will be discussed later. His skin was warm and radiated organotic heat, particularly in the region of the solar plexus. His parents reported that when he slept, his ears became red and his face strongly flushed. His gait was coordinated, soft, and yielding. There was no imbalance. He caught his balance easily when he tripped. He ran well and was very active most of the time. David gave freely, shared what he had, but got desperate when other children only took from him without responding to his kindness. Even as a small child, he used to share things with his parents and other children. He was not taught to do so. These qualities developed quite spontaneously. We may assume with some certainty that an organism which yields to its natural emotions is also inclined to be outgoing in other respects. The parents admitted they had often wondered and worried about how this yielding attitude would affect his later existence when he met the take, hit, and run attitude of armored character structures. David was social to a very high degree. He got along with nearly everyone and made friends easily. On the other hand, he disliked noise and roughness intensely." End of quote. This was with even more convincing clarity visible by the fact that David and other of those freely raised children had no interest at all in playing with their feces, as Freud had considered it as a normal behavior for a baby. Reich's findings clearly contradicted Freud's assumptions and showed that Freud more or less was creating myths, as his findings were based upon repressively raised children. I quote, "Neither was he in any way taught to be regular or clean. He showed repugnance to excretions of his own accord, This fact is in agreement with the natural cleanliness seen in dogs, cats, research mice, etc. Thus, tales about natural inherited liking for fecal pleasures turn out to be a myth, which came about because psychoanalysis derived its observations from armored character structures and mistook secondary drives for naturally given tendencies. This mistake led to the notion that the child is born with inclinations toward dirtiness and has to sublimate its pregenital anal desires. The observations were correct, but they pertained only to already distorted human structure. End of quote. From his observations, Reich again extrapolates and lets us perceive the high political impact of his findings. I quote, "The peace revolutions are, at best, no more than desperate attempts at curing political malignancy, and they probably are the worst means of cheating people out of peaceful lives in the interests of political power machines. On the other hand, knowledge of how to prevent the development of sadism in our children would make most of the campaigning for peace unnecessary. There would be no secondary drive structure in the human animal on which to build for wars." End of quote. Thus, to conclude, Reich's research on infants and his earlier research on adults clearly shows that the sadistic structure of modern man, the general high destructiveness of large civilizations, and the craving for authority in most of little men in our world are not inborn faults in the human setup, as most religions have taught us, but are secondary pathological effects of anti-life education and repressive, sadistic, and brutal child-rearing that disregards most of the emotional and tactile needs of the child. In children that were raised in ergonomic and tactile abundance, Reich observed exactly the qualities that we wish were common characteristics of the human condition: fearlessness, honesty, flexibility, emotional balance, and high contact ability. I can thus summarize that emotions were never truly identified and understood in the Western world because of the general denial to recognize that life is energy and not some mystic godly ejaculation into matter. The recent attention they seem to get at some universities is, after all, infantile and ridiculous, so much the more the researchers have themselves no idea what they are talking about. The astounding research Wilhelm Reich almost single-handedly did on this important subject is never even mentioned by these modern Neanderthals. The few researchers who have shown the truth have been shunned and persecuted throughout their lifetimes, and their revealing and important findings have not found the acclaim and the interest they truly deserve. The emotional plague and its foremost tool, moralism, is growing instead of decreasing. Thus, the chance of Western culture to grow into an emotionally more balanced and conscious culture has largely been annihilated by the upsurge of restorative or even fascist forms of government that try to repress all the scientific and cultural achievements that have been made, mostly during the 20th century, in matters of research into what emotions are and why we need lively emotions for living peacefully and constructively. Because of the almost total misevaluation of emotions and the role they play in the healthy, unarmored human and animal organism, sexuality has never been truly understood. The Freudian dogma that assumes that our sexual emotions being unconscious drives is simply wrong, a myth as so many of his highly acclaimed and slavishly followed theories. Sex research needs therefore to be completely put upside down in order to see what the truth is in matters of sexual attraction. Putting the myths aside, we then clearly see that at the start of every sexual attraction, there was an emotional attraction at first. sexual attraction follows emotional attraction and not vice versa, as most sexologists believe.